Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music on the Air and in Your Ear. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, you've been talking, you never shut up, but right now you just keep going and going and going. It's embarrassing, because nobody wants to hear from you, they want to hear from our guest. Just introduce them, and will you shut up already?
Yeah, it's true. I do talk so much these days. But our guest is a wonderful, wow, he's like a prodigy. He plays guitar, he plays all the, so much, does the singing.
And apparently the cops are coming for him.
That's right, the cops are here, and they're coming for somebody. I'm not sure who yet, but we have Griffin Tucker, who is here to talk about his new single, Gypsy Woman, and he's got the real rock revolution behind him. And Griffin, how are you?
I'm doing very well. The cops are like right outside my door, and I'm sure y'all heard them, but I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Well, we're great. Hopefully they don't take you away, because we got some business to take care of right now.
And what are they drawing you in for? Too many badass guitar licks?
Probably playing so loud in my house, probably a noise complaint, I guess. I don't know why they'd be putting on their sirens for that, but you never know.
Yeah, that's right. Make some noise to ensure that they know that you're making too much noise.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of that noise, you know, and I'll use air quotes on a podcast. But so obviously, Gypsy Woman, new song that you've got coming out. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about just the writing of it and I guess like how you came through the band and put it out. How did it come to us?
Gypsy Woman, the way it started, I think I started writing it over 2 years ago. Back when I was trying to get this band Vinyl Device together. Of course, 2 years ago was before the pandemic. We kind of hit a rut in our plans whenever the pandemic hit. But I did start writing this song with my good friend Garrett, and we were writing this song. And it was just a very natural, just had a riff, and we just wanted to make something up on the spot. And I just let it sit there for a while, and I came back to it not too long ago, and I just thought this is a pretty good song, so I added some extra sections to it. But it's just a simple rock song, a fictional, I guess, rock song about a gypsy woman who casts spells and casts a spell on me. It's a really cool song, and I'm really glad that it's finally, I'm finally giving it to y'all.
Yeah, I mean, so what you're saying is that you haven't met any gypsy women.
No, I have not met a gypsy woman, and I have not been cast under a spell yet.
Yeah, I've not met any gypsy women either. I feel like this is like a problem. I
find that hard to believe with all the women you do with that.
So
maybe I don't know that I've been cast under a spell.
Oh yeah, that's right. So it's just, we could go off on a tangent there, and we'll save that for later.
Movie, The Love Witch. Oh man, that's some crazy movie, The Love Witch. That's one. If that's what it's like to be under a spell, I don't want to do it. You end up with your blood sucked out.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So then, what's the difference, I guess, between you playing solo and playing with the Real Rock Revolution? Like, what kind of? I mean, obviously, I know the difference between solo and a band, but like musically, what is the difference between that?
The camaraderie, really, it's so important when it comes to really making a full song with multiple parts. Because up to now, I've been recording all my songs just me, where I'd go in and do the drums, and then I'd do the bass, and then I'd do the guitar, and I'm trying to capture this feeling, but in like five different takes on five different instruments. Whereas now, since I'm recording with the full band, we're doing it together and we're feeding off each other. We're kind of giving each other, the energy that we need. And the chemistry, I mean, these guys, I love, these guys are my brothers. Just the chemistry in the studio, just playing the song together, it's just a completely different feeling. And I think that comes across on the song.
It's also really interesting, I guess, like, when you go from writing a song, like, do you just give them essentially the completed song and they play what you play, or are they adding parts to it that you would be like, oh, I didn't think of that, so that's cool.
I give them the reference, like I make demos for these songs, like where I play everything, but I almost always let them take their own liberty so they can, you know, put a little bit of themselves in it so that it's not just, you know, the Griffin Tucker Show. I want the Real Rock Revolution to shine through on these songs as well.
How long does it take you to actually to write a normal song, and then how long would it take you to kind of make the demo?
To write a song, I mean, to fully, like, get it complete, this song took me 2 years to finally, like, get it complete. But I guess when it really comes down to really kind of the actual writing part of it, I mean, I think at the most it would take, like, less than a week to actually, like, if I worked on it, like, every single hour of every single day, it would probably be, like, less than a week. And making a demo, especially once I've written it and once I've kind of gotten the ideas down, it usually takes me, like, maybe, like, an afternoon, maybe going into the evening, just to make a full demo. And, yeah, it's a really fun process just to sit down and really kind of, like, imagine each part and how each part is going to, you know, how the drums are going to interplay with the bass and how the guitar is going to interact with the vocal. It's a very fun process to, you know, write it all and arrange it all.
I mean, you're known primarily for being a guitarist, and you've certainly known how to play the guitar for a long time and the other instruments. I mean, what was it? You taught yourself before you were 13?
Yes, I taught myself drums, piano, guitar, bass, and of course other instruments like ukulele, mandolin, harmonica, all those instruments. But yeah.
Theremin? No theremin?
No theremin, not yet. You need to get a theremin.
Is that just because you wanted to know everything, or just that you couldn't make up your mind?
It's just that I guess I just wanted to know everything, because when I was really young, when I was less than a year old, I was stuck in the hospital, and the only thing that would calm me down was classical music. So I've constantly had this natural curiosity and love for different instruments and how different instruments can have different flavors to a song and how different melodies, like I love counter melody too. Like the amount of counter melody I hear in like Bach or Beethoven or Mozart, it's really just incredible. So I love, and so the reason why I learned all these different instruments is just that I wanted to be able to create all of those different sounds and not just be restricted to just drums or just guitar. I want to be able to, you know, write my own bass lines or write a little bit of a, you know, a Rhodes part, or, you know.
Is there an instrument that maybe you feel that isn't your favorite to play, or it's just not quite, it's the one that you maybe, like, dread the most?
Mandolin is really, really tough to play, because the way it's strung is it's backwards from a guitar. Like, the intervals between strings is just a little bit larger than on like, guitars or basses. But it's really tough also because the neck is so small. It's just a very tiny instrument. But if I had to pick one, yeah, I think the mandolin is pretty, it's a pretty weird one.
How often do you add different instruments like that to your music? Like, is there a point where you see like a new instrument and you're like, oh, I should learn how to use that. And then you think like, oh, and then I could add it to this song because like a mandolin part would go really well in this.
Yeah, I mean, I love learning, you know, the fun thing about learning different instruments and picking up different instruments is always that you can always use, like, different sounds and you can make new, you know, you don't have to be restricted to one sound. Like, you can only do so much with an overdriven guitar, but if you have a steel guitar, if you have a ukulele or a mandolin, or you have, you know, a Rhodes or a Wurlitzer or an organ, it gives you different flavors that you can use in different songs to make, you know, it's not all just going to be like, you know, loud rock and roll. Sometimes it can be like an acoustic ballad. Like Heartful of Love is the first song I ever wrote specifically for an acoustic guitar. And of course, with it being on an acoustic guitar, it's a very different style than most of my other songs. But yeah, I mean, learning different instruments definitely gives me that liberty to be able to make different kinds of songs.
You know, I'm always fascinated by that because, I mean, I do know there are artists out there who will be like, okay, we have the mandolin on this record. We're not going to use it on another record. It's for these songs. And then the next album, they're going to use a different instrument that they hadn't used before. And they really, really explore it album by album. But it sounds like you're kind of going more song by song what you need.
I the way that I write, it's very much like I'm constantly listening to music, listening to you know, classic songs. If I ever hear, like, you know, my songs are released, being released now, I'm constantly just absorbing it all and just kind of seeing what sticks in my mind. And it's very, it's just a very natural process. Like, I just pick up any instrument around my house, and if I'm feeling, if it resonates with me and I'm kind of feeling, you know, if I'm feeling a sort of way, like if I'm feeling super happy or kind of down, or if I'm feeling, you know, just any different emotion, it's, it, it always varies song to song, but I'm always trying to, I'm not trying to repeat myself. That's the one thing that I really try hard not to do. So having different instruments definitely helps me with not doing that.
How many instruments do you just have lying around your house?
A whole lot. I have somewhere around 18 to 19 guitars, three basses, two drum kits, two ukuleles, two ukuleles, one mandolin. I have a baby grand downstairs and a keyboard upstairs. I've collected quite a lot over the years, but yeah, I mean, I love just walking around and kind of like looking at an instrument and be like, oh, I'm going to write something on that one today. And then the next day I'm going to write something on this other one, you know, today. It's very fun.
Do you find that they have different personalities and that helps you write different songs based on what you're picking up?
100%. Even with guitars, like each guitar you pick up is going to sound different because of pickups. Like, you know, you could get a Strat and it would sound completely different from a Les Paul. Or even, you know, humbuckers on a Les Paul could sound very different from P90s. It's just, you know, you can find all these different sounds, and of course, even with like amplification, they could change the sound, and effects and all that type of stuff. It's very fun to find new flavors to add to these songs.
So what's maybe a genre of music or an artist that has influenced you that people wouldn't expect?
Well, of course, the big ones, you know, the big ones for me are like Beatles, Led Zeppelin, and Queen. But one band, well, actually, I used to love classical music, and the more like people, like even my very close friends, I tell them that too. They're like, what? You write like, you know, loud rock and roll. Why would you ever like classical music? It doesn't have any words or anything. But I still love classical music. But even I used to listen to ABBA a lot. Just that, you know, yeah, I love ABBA, that disco and that, you know, that pop. I mean, they just have great voices, and Benny and Bjorn were just, you know, they were just great songwriters. So it all just blended in so well together. But those are the big, you know, the big like outliers as far as my influences.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, how did you find a lot of these bands? Like, were your parents playing them and you just kind of, you know, and you just kind of gathered it, or was it from the classical music and you just kind of started advancing out from there?
My parents are very responsible for giving me my influences. Whether it was like giving me like little like DVDs of classical music when I was like 6 months old, or whether it was playing the Beatles radio in the car when I was driving to school when I was 3 years old, or if it was, you know, giving me an electronic drum set and giving me some Kiss records. I very much have my parents to, my, I guess, blame for my influences. But yeah, that's really where I got my influences from.
How important is it to have supportive parents, especially like choosing a career like you have?
It's very important. Honestly, it takes a village. I actually just watched the Billie Eilish documentary that just came out on Apple TV. And I saw a lot of myself in that, because the amount of family that's involved in making the whole thing come together is so important. Like even Phineas, producing, Billie's songs, and, her mom and her dad kind of, you know, helping getting like connections and all that type of stuff. It's very important to have supportive parents, because that's really, It's also your roots, especially if you're going to, you know, this industry is very fickle. So it's very important to have your roots be very steady, and just to be able to depend on your roots and your family through thick and thin through this industry.
Was it your decision kind of thing to go on The Voice and to try to get through on American Idol and stuff like that?
I didn't really start that. Both the voice and American Idol, they scouted me out. And I honestly don't think I would have ever gone on those competitions if it weren't for them scouting me out, just because I don't really see music as a competition. Because everyone expresses themselves differently, whether it's, you know, playing different kinds of rock or different genres altogether. But they scouted me out, so I figured, like, you know, this must be a God thing. So I took them. I'm very grateful that I did, and that I got to meet all the different contestants and the judges, and most importantly, the people who watch those shows. Because sadly, I can't, you know, I'm kind of a hypocrite because I just listen to classic music, but most people aren't looking for indie bands these days. But people are watching, you know, these TV shows, and they're seeing new talent on shows like The Voice and American Idol and X Factor and America's Got Talent. So it's a very good platform for these very talented people to get to show, you know, to give what they have to a new audience. And that's really the biggest takeaway that I took from those two shows.
How much do you try to learn? Like, I mean, especially at your young age, like, how much do you try to learn and take from everybody that you can around you?
It's so important. I mean, whether it's taking, you know, listening to my influences, like listening to the Beatles and kind of like helping me with making melodies, or listening to Led Zeppelin and figuring out how to interplay drums and guitar, or Queen with their harmonies, and of course, you know, just their big production, or whether it's people that I'm working with, like, I'm working with very, very, I love the people that I work with, like Therese Marie and Robbie Gustin. I mean, just listening to different genres and different people and learning their experiences and kind of finding how I can relate to that and how I can use that in my own songs. So it's extremely important to constantly be observing the world around you and not just be, you know, so in your own lane, or I guess kind of, you know, sticking to what you've grown up with. It's very important to learn what other people are doing and how that can change what you do.
What goes into making a riff for you?
It's very natural. It's very hard to describe. I guess I really just sit down and I'm just noodling around. I just kind of, you know, just warm up my fingers. And if something, usually riffs come out of mistakes. Like if I ever make a mistake, like playing some, like doing like a noodling, like playing another song, if I ever like make a mistake, then I kind of build on that mistake and I keep building. And then if I find a little like snippet of that, you know, that little like building I have, then I'll take that and I'll put it in a voice memo, save it for later, come back to it so that it completely becomes a completely separate idea from what it originally was, you know, just a little mistake. But it's a very weird process. I'm sure it's the same with like coming up with lyrics. It's just like, you're just walking around talking to people and then you say something like, oh, that was catchy. That sounded kind of cool. And you just write it down. You come back to it and like, well, that still sounds cool. I guess I can kind of build off of this idea. So it's very much it's almost like an accidental process, but it's very spontaneous.
And then, I mean, your evolution in the industry is so, because I mean, you've really been in it for so long. Like, what's the difference, I guess, between writing a song at 13 and writing a song at 19?
It's really just experience, because when I started writing songs, it was very much like very simple. Like I was just glad that I could like come up with any chord progression or any riff, and just kind of it was very just exhilarating just to be doing the process at all. But now that I've written songs for, you know, for a while, I've given higher standards to myself, and I'm taking a whole lot more time. And I'm critiquing myself a whole lot more with the songs that I'm writing now, because I really want to exceed my own expectations, because I'm always going to be my own worst critic. But I'm always trying to outdo myself and be better than the last song. And, you know, it's just very, I give myself a whole lot more pressure than I did back when I was like, you know, 11, 12, 13.
I was going to ask, like, do you play your songs for your parents? Do you look for input before you kind of bring it to the band? Or is it just kind of like, nope, I like this, I'm ready to bring it?
I'm always looking for feedback because I, you know, the musician's ear is always going to be different to the listener's ear. For example, one of my songs on my my first EP, "Light It Up," "Light It Up" was personally my least favorite song like on the EP. But everyone who heard the song was like, "Oh my gosh, this is my favorite song like of yours like ever." I still don't understand that. But it just goes to show that, you know, everyone's ears are different. So I'm always looking for different feedback of like, oh, well, this part of this was good. This part, not so much. We could work on this. So it's very important, just to kind of get other feedback just so it can, you know, it can really just be a classic and not just like a very like niche. Like if I'm looking for like a little niche, if I'm looking for other input, that'll kind of broaden like its reach as far as like what it appeals to, I guess.
As a young musical artist, what do you feel about the trend towards singles and EPs and no longer full-length albums? How do you feel about that personally?
I mean, I personally love crafting an album. Like, I'm actually looking at my vinyl collection over here. But just looking at all these albums, they're just so well-crafted. And, you know, some of these albums, like Sgt. Pepper's or Houses of the Holy or A Night at the Opera, these great albums of just varied music. And it's just a wonderful package. And it's an art that's kind of been lost lately. But I mean, you know, singles are always good. I mean, everyone, you know, even back in the day released singles along with their albums. And usually those singles are what most people heard. But yeah, I mean, the art of an album really has just been lost, and I'm hoping that one day I'll be able to release a real full length album and kind of, you know, just have that be its own statement and just kind of like a moment in time just captured in 12 or 13 songs.
The concept album like Tommy or something like that is, you know, seems like it's gone, and that's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, Sgt. Pepper's, you know, that's one of my personal favorite albums, and it's just got so many great songs on it, and they're not all the same, but they all kind of fit together as a package, as, you know, as it flows through the album, it all works together. And it's something that I definitely miss as far as, you know, how music is being released now.
Is that your favorite Beatles album?
It's always tough to come up with that. I'm definitely more of a mid Beatles person, like Rubber Soul, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's, Magical Mystery Tour. I love all their psychedelic stuff. But yeah, Sgt. Pepper's is definitely up there, but I'm starting to like Revolver a lot nowadays. And, you know, Rubber Soul is up there too. So, yeah.
I go with Revolver myself, but
I'm an Abbey Road man.
Wrong with any of them. Yep. Abbey Road man. There you go. Can't go wrong with any of these.
100%.
So I guess, you know, like, is it difficult to like play guitar and sing on stage, or is it just something for you that's so natural?
I've been doing it for so long, and I've constantly been working at it and trying to get better at both playing guitar and singing that it's really just become, you know, just like second nature. Like I feel more comfortable when I'm singing and playing guitar than when I'm not singing and playing guitar or singing and playing drums. It's just become like who I am. That's like what I've been born to do. It's just like, you know, it's just a part of me. So singing and playing guitar, it's just that's just how I interact with people. That's how I relate to people. That's what I can give to people. Like I'm so like terrible at just like small talk. I'm finding that more and more nowadays. Like even when I go to dinner with my friends, I'm always just like, I don't know what to talk about. But whenever I'm on stage, I'm just so comfortable and so, you know, just so happy and so joyful that the people who are on the other side of this performance conversation are enjoying it just as much as, you know, me and the guys on stage are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's interesting. Like, one of the things that I always wonder about musicians is, do they talk about music constantly when they're just talking to other people, or is there like, I mean, obviously life things happen, but it feels like I know Mont and I talk about music a lot. So it's just like, do you guys talk about music?
Football? That's it.
Yeah. That's right.
I personally love nerding out about my favorite bands, like the Beatles, like Trees and I. We love to have our fights about who's better, John or Paul. But of course, I love geeking out about like the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Queens. But if, I mean, I love just talking about, you know, music and my favorite bands and all that type of stuff. Because it's really just what I'm doing all the time now. And I love doing it, but it's really just what I'm doing most of the time. So it's always nice to have someone to talk about all that type of stuff with.
And the correct answer is George.
George?
Ringo.
He didn't even get started until like halfway through the Beatles' career. I mean, yes, I will agree with you that All Things Must Pass is probably the best Beatles solo album. But I mean, Paul and John during the Beatles were just a force to be reckoned with.
That's
so
true,
I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you on that front.
I love George's guitar playing. His work is just.
I mean, I'm even playing Here Comes the Sun in my acoustic sets with the Rock Revolution. I love them all. I mean, Ringo was my first favorite Beatle. He was the one who really inspired me to play drums because that's what I started with. But I mean, just Paul's melody and John's introspection and George's guitar playing and Ringo just kind of gluing it all together. I mean, it was an incredible package. And it was honestly a miracle that they all grew up in the same town. When I really think about it, because most bands are looking for artists like, or musicians like around like the country. But with the Beatles, they were all in like one town and it all just worked together so well.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, go ahead, Brett.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's like there's the Beatles and Queen. I mean, I was actually having a conversation with somebody about Queen, and like you can't have Queen without all the four of them, because Freddie's great, one of the best frontmen ever, but Freddie solo isn't Queen.
No. Yeah, I mean Queen as the four of them, they all individually wrote at least one number one hit. And it's really just incredible to think about that all four of them were so talented in their own right, and yet when they worked together, they were even better than the individual parts. Because of course when you think about like Bohemian Rhapsody, yes, that's Freddie's like brainchild. That's like his masterpiece. But even with like Brian adds his guitar solo and it's so iconic and it fits perfectly and you couldn't imagine the song without it. So it's really just incredible just to think that they all worked together so well and that they were able to keep it going for as long as they did, you know.
Yeah, and I just liken it to the Beatles too, you know, it's just how they met and the fact that they all worked together is so amazing.
Yeah.
So where do you see yourself in, say, 10 years? Not so much on you know, your career success, but musically, how do you want to evolve?
I'm hoping that I'll just get more and more into rock because, you know, every time I think about this, like, where will I be? Where am I hoping to be in 10 years? I think about where I was when I was 9, because I'm 19 now. Where I was when I was nine, I was just in a Beatles tribute band, and I was really happy just doing that. I was just, you know, playing music I loved. I was back behind the drums. I had just learned guitar, and I was good where I was. But I could have never ever imagined, you know, being my own artist or being on The Voice of American Idol or getting to go to England to perform a couple shows. And it's really just weird to think about how that much has changed in the past 10 years. And it's really inspiring in a way, and it's almost haunting in a way, just to think that the next 10 years I'm probably going to be a completely different person than I am right now. Of course, I'm hoping that I'll still be the rock and roll loving guy that I am in the same, the same person that I am now. But, it's weird to think about that a lot could change in the next 10 years, but I'm hoping that I'll just keep writing music, keep recording and keep playing for the Griffin Army.
Well, it's funny because it feels like by 19, you've done more than most people will do in an entire lifetime. So perhaps retirement. I mean, jeez.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I could ever, like, you know, even Paul McCartney, he did this interview in 1964, like right when the Beatles, like, you know, they were like in America, they were like on top of the world. I think it was David Frost. He interviewed Paul and he was like, what do you think you'll be doing in the next, you know, for the rest of your life? Where do you think you'll end up? He's like, well, hopefully I'll retire someday. And of course, now Paul is here, you know, all these years later, like, you know, like 50 something years later, 60 something years later, and he's still killing it, and he's still playing live, and he's still releasing music. And honestly, as a creative person, you're kind of forced into that needing to create and needing to give something to people, and just to be able to create music, whether that's music or whether it's like, painting or drawing or doing anything that's creative. It's you're kind of you, I, it's almost like an obligation to create. So yeah, it's very weird to think about that someday I should feel like I'm supposed to retire, but I kind of can't. I probably won't be able to get away from wanting to create and wanting to play music and wanting to entertain people.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a chance to see Paul in concert?
I did. It was actually my first concert. It was in 2009.
Wow.
So I would have been 8. I would probably been 8 years old, and it was just I was in the same room as the Beatles. I was in heaven. And of course, you know, I love like all the songs he played, and of course seeing the fireworks go off and Live and Let Die and Hey Jude and all these great songs. And of course he's playing for at least 2 hours, probably 3 hours, I think he was playing at the time. And it's really just incredible that, you know, at the age he is, he's still able to play for that long and to, you know, and to play that well for that long. It's really, really just incredible.
Yeah, there's no
You're
question.
lucky. I haven't had a chance to see him. I mean, it's still on the bucket list.
Yeah, I'm hoping with, you know, as things start opening up, I'm hoping that Paul will tour again, especially for his new album, McCartney 3. I'm hoping that he'll play some songs for that, and also just, you know, come around the world once or twice, you know.
So as a classic music fan, what are some of the other bands out there that you're dying to see that you haven't seen?
Man, I've seen Paul McCartney and I've seen Kiss. I saw Kiss 3 times. But other bands that I would love to see, I mean, I'd love to see AC/DC. I mean, Angus Young is one of my guitar heroes. I'd love to see Robert Plant. He's still going at it, and he's still singing Led Zeppelin music and his own, you know, singing his own songs and all that stuff. I mean, and of course, I'd love to see Queen with Adam Lambert. As much as it's not like the Queen, I would love to see Brian and Roger play, just because I love all that music, and I think Adam's doing a fine job as, you know, as the lead singer for Queen nowadays. But yeah, I mean, I love to see all those classic bands, even like Aerosmith and like all these other bands. I'd love to be able to see them all before, you know, before it's too late, I guess.
How about, like, you've got a couple of shows coming up. I mean, one solo and then the Real Rock Revolution. Like, what's it like now to like feeling like you're starting to get back out there?
It's so nice just to be able to play live, because the difference between I love both. You know, creating a song in the studio, but also playing those songs live for completely different reasons. Just because with going in the studio, you can really spend a lot of time perfecting a song and adding different layers to a song and doing things that you could never do, you know, as a 4-piece live. You can add like more than 4 parts or more than, you know, 4 parts you could ever do live. But the thing about playing live is that the other side of the conversation, the audience is right in front of you, and you're getting that instant feedback, the instant applause. It's not like creating a song, then, you know, like recording it, mixing it, mastering it, you know, uploading it to wherever, and then posting it, and then hoping that you get comments from, you know, just text and comments. But it's such a gratifying feeling, and such a joyful feeling that I get when I get to be in front of the people who are enjoying the music just as much as, you know, as I am, or, you know, the band is.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how many covers and such do you usually wind up putting into one of your sets?
I mean, the band, you know, the Rock Revolution is so good. I can throw anything at them and they'll just kill it. I'm playing a 3-hour show, not too long. I think this coming weekend or the weekend after. But I'm playing like 3 hours, so of course I don't really have 3 hours of my own originals. So we're playing Queen, Zeppelin, the Beatles, and we're actually putting like a little acoustic set in the middle. So we're really just kind of reaching like all the different influences, but also playing as many of our songs as we can.
How many songs do you have written that you haven't got a chance to demo yet or record?
Man, it's really a lot. There's a lot of riffs floating around, even like full like instrumental structures floating around, even some songs that have, you know, vocals and instruments like completely like demoed out. But it's tough to say like exactly how many. It's at least like 10, you know, like it's a lot that's floating around, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get in the studio and record it all so that we can release it all and kind of, you know, just get it out there, because I love these songs and I'm really excited that you know, that y'all are going to have them one day. So yeah, there's a lot floating around and I'm hoping we're going to get it out there soon.
Do you test out music live before you would maybe record it in the studio?
Definitely. Actually, at these shows that the Rock Revolution is playing, we're playing at least like 5 songs that haven't been released yet. And we're just trying them out and constantly just listening for new things like, oh, maybe this section could just be a little bit shorter so we can make the song more succinct. Or we could add this section, like maybe this will make the song more interesting if we add this in. So yeah, we're constantly playing new songs live just to kind of see people's reactions and of course our reactions to our own songs. So yeah, we're constantly, you know, trying everything out.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's so interesting, you think, when with all the music and all the just the little snippets that you have. I mean, we talk to so many musicians that wind up going through their collection of all these like voice memos, because that's what this last year and a bit have really allowed them to do, is kind of start cataloging their music.
Definitely. I mean, that as much as the pandemic has really hurt a lot of people, It's been really good for just being able to take a little bit of a break from the constant, like, because of course I love playing shows, so I constantly want to be playing shows whenever I can, and it really just gave me just a little bit of a break, just to kind of miss music for a little bit, just so I can really kind of drive myself crazy, so I can start like wanting to write ideas and wanting to, you know, just put something down and kind of create new songs, because it really just made me miss making music and playing music. So yeah, I mean, it was really good for my voice memo library, as you're saying. But yeah, it was really good in that aspect.
Well, Griffin, I know that we've had a great time talking to you and big fans of your music, and we definitely look forward to hearing those new songs. But we want to give you the chance to tell everybody how they can keep up with you and the Real Rock Revolution and your shows and all the new music.
I am on Facebook as Griffin Tucker Music. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Griffin K. Tucker. I'm on TikTok. I can never remember what my handle is on TikTok, but if you search up Griffin Tucker, you can most likely find me. My website is griffintuckermusic.rocks. And I also just want to say thank you both for having me on. This was really fun, and I really appreciate the questions that you asked.
Thank you. I mean, I wish I had my stuff together at 19 the way you do.
Yeah.
Heck, I wish I had it together now the way you do. So this has been a great time for us as well.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks so much, Griffin. We look forward to hearing more music from you, and now go out and shoo those police away.
All right. I'll take care of that.
Yeah. Perfect. Awesome. Well, all the best, Griffin, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye now.
she tried to cast a spell on me. She had long dark hair, just as black as night, with a secret that can't be told. And when I looked into her eyes, she had the type of soul. Who's that gypsy woman? What's she doing to me? She knows how to use her magic. She's crazy, psychopathic. Who's that gypsy woman? What's she doing to me? Locked inside of magic. How can I break free? Yeah. Falling deeper in a spell, I was under lock and key. I was mesmerized, I was hypnotized, my mind was leaving me. I had to try and save myself, all that I could do was run. And then she appeared, my darkest fear, and I was left undone. Who's that gypsy woman? What's she doing to me? She knows how to use her magic. She's crazy, psychopathic. Who's that gypsy woman? What's she doing to me? Locked inside.